Welcome to episode 75 of The Channel Plan, episode Lakin Tomlinson. My name is Kyle Posey. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Akash. Akash, fresh off of a playoff victory. How are you doing?
Doing fantastic, KP. In honor of Lakin Tomlinson, I was hoping our producer, Rob, would send us some victory donuts. Hashtag trench warfare. But yeah, he was slacking. He did not. Just kidding. But you just got back from Dallas. How was that?
Yeah, still waiting on those donuts, by the way, Rob. It was great. It was a lot of fun. Dallas is an interesting city. Obviously, everybody saw the crowd and what they did to the Cowboys fans and, you know, how they treated them poorly after the game. But during my stay at a hotel, I saw the hotel clerk yelling at the people who were staying at the hotel, which was something else. I saw just a lot of anger all weekend, and that kind of played itself out in the stadium as well.
I saw someone post a receipt online from some Dallas restaurant, and the restaurant charged them a 49ers fee for $50. Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh, Dallas. But we still get to talk about football, man, because the 49ers were able to hang on against the Dallas Cowboys. So let's talk about that, because both of us expected the 49ers to win. The part of the reason, like, I couldn't fully understand why the Cowboys were favored. Yes, they had just scored 50 points, you know, in two of the past three games. But if you just looked at the matchup, there was a lot to like for the 49ers. And I feel like the first drive really set the tone for the 49ers on offense. Like, that is who they are. They are going to bully you. They are going to run right through you. And then the defense, man, they were just lights out for most of the game. To hold that offense to one touchdown in each half is very tough, too. Like, that just does not happen against the Cowboys offense that has one of the better quarterbacks in Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, who had finished the game with one catch, and Amari Cooper, who, you know, did most of his damage on that one reception in the slot. Then after that, D'Amico Ryans made adjustments, pretty much like, yeah, we're not going to do that again. And sure enough, the Cowboys really didn't move the ball consistently until the final drive. But a lot to like. Did this game go as you expected?
100%. If you listen to last week's episode of The Shannon Plan, which we hope you do, rate, subscribe, review to the Niners Nation Podcast Network, we talked about a lot of the things that happened, right? We talked about how the Cowboys, you know, interior offensive line was the weak point. Their left guard, Connor Williams, he got worked. We thought that the Cowboys defensively were a little soft and that the 49ers could bully or be a little physical. And they were on that opening drive where they went boom, 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 right down the field, finished with an Elijah Mitchell touchdown run. And even on that touchdown run, look at the blocks that they put on. George Kittle, huge block. Brandon Ayuk blocking Micah Parsons. You could tell Micah Parsons was frustrated. He was swinging after the first drive, after like the first 7-8 plays, because he knew that the Niners were just taking it to their defense.
And so real quick on that play, over the course of the game, the 49ers tried to block a Cowboys edge rusher, edge defender, whoever was setting the edge with Trent Sherfield. He failed. Deebo Samuel got ran over. Charlie Warner, he failed. So Brandon Ayuk was the only person out of three different players, out of four total, I guess, who was able to block their edge rusher. And by the way, if you have not rewatched that game, Micah Parsons was an all-star. He was all everything. He was all over the place. So Ayuk was the literal reason that Elijah Mitchell was able to score. Didn't mean to cut you off, but his blocking is a big reason why that they are able to do the things they can do and have been able to get these guys to the edge. Go ahead.
It was all the things we talked about during the week, right? How good are the Cowboys coordinators, Dan Quinn and Kellen Moore? Could they out-coach D'Amico Ryans and Kyle Shanahan? How mentally tough, how physically tough is this Cowboys team, right? How good are they against, you know, better opponents? Down the stretch of the season, they didn't really play anyone worth the salt. So all these things put together, you and I just felt pretty confident in the 49ers, not only covering the 3-point spread or whatever it was, but just winning outright. And they went in there for about a half, they were kicking their ass. When Deebo Samuel scored that 26-yard touchdown and they went up, I think it was 16 at that point, I was like, the route is on. But like any other 49ers game, they never make sure you turn off the TV. They make sure you watch every last second. Cardiac kids, it's always a heart attack game with them, but somehow, some way they were able to pull it out. But, you know, credit to D'Amico Ryans. You hit the nail on the head. Through three quarters, you know, ignoring what happened in that fourth quarter, the Dallas Cowboys offense punted 5 times. Dak Prescott had an interception. They only had 114 net yards of offense and only 7 points. So what they did in those three quarters, and one of those was without Nick Bosa, who was out with the concussion.
Just good player.
Outstanding stuff. Pretty good. Pretty good.
Just, yeah, I think D'Amico Ryan's, he is really good at his job. I think, and I have this coming out too later on Wednesday, where he was able to get one-on-one matchups. He was able to manipulate what Dallas is doing up front. And he was getting one-on-one matchups for Bosa, and he was getting one-on-one matchups for Connor Williams against whoever. So it was Arden Key versus Connor Williams. It was DJ Jones, who is unbelievable and has been unbelievable this past month, and Eric Armstead, who apparently is the best three technique in the NFL because he has just been running through folks' face for like ever since pretty much Javon Kinlaw went down and they moved him inside. He has been better than – he's pretty much been the person you would expect Kinlaw to be, and I think that's kind of going – just under the radar. He's been unheralded, but I don't know if it's a sack thing, but that's not true because he's getting sacks now too. So I don't know. Maybe I think we just take for granted how easily he's been able to move inside. And there's no doubt, you know, having a bunch of good players makes you a better defensive coordinator. But I think just Ryan's being able to change up his looks, throwing Dallas off, you know, just keeping them off kilter. And he those 5 sacks that they had, a lot of them, sure, again, you have good players, but yeah, like Dak's holding the ball because he doesn't know what's going on in the backfield, and D'Amico Ryans deserves a ton of credit for that. Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say on the opening drive, 3rd and 12, Cowboys are backed up against their own end zone. Bosa's rushing from the edge, of course, and Kellen Moore has a tight end in to chip Nick Bosa. Well, what does D'Amico Ryans do? He says, okay, you're not going to chip my edge rusher. I'm going to loop him around and have him rush up the middle. So there's no chip. Bosa comes around and he's untouched. It's a sack. So just minor subtle adjustments like that, that maybe weren't there in the past years are. And it's just great scheme.
So that was one of the plays that I broke down. They have Samson Ebukam in a 9 technique on the right side. So by doing that, you're putting your worst rusher against their one of their best, Tyron Smith, and they have to go Ezekiel Elliott on that side too because he's out wide. So you're wasting two of their better pass protectors against your worst. On the other side, you have Bosa one-on-one against a guy who cannot really pass protect, and then you have Eric Armstead inside. He dives into the middle. So now you have your left guard one-on-one against Arden Key. So that's what I mean, creating double teams or creating one-on-ones in the same play. And then on that same play, they're getting the Cowboys offensive line at different levels. So that is the whole goal when you're running these stunts. If you can get alignment at 3 different levels and one guy is on the like 15, another's on the 16, and another's on the 17. It's a beautiful thing to watch, man. They're really well coached. Again, Bosa is very good. So having a player like him allows you to do these type of things. But I think the way that they execute, their speed, you can't simulate that. Dre Greenlaw, Aziz Alshire, Fred Warner, like they were flying around all game. Jimmy Ward seemed like he was jumping some plays in the run, which is a good thing. Like, you like to see the safeties get aggressive. They just don't really make many mistakes, man. And it you're starting to see this team look like who we kind of thought they would be. I don't know if they're on the 2019 level. I think their aggression and their speed is. And, you know, that's why they're having the type of success that they are. So the special teams in the offense did not play as well, especially in the second half, but the defense was able to bail them out. And let's talk about the offense here real quick, because at first they're rolling and you're thinking, oh man, this is going to be a blowout. And then the Jimmy coaster happens. So he misses Brandon Ayuk. There are a couple passes that sailed on him. And then, you know, the interception toward the end of the game. And to be clear, like, he was very – Jimmy did not mince any words on Tuesday when he spoke that, hey, my shoulder is hurting me. My shoulder is being affected by all of these throws. Kyle Shanahan, not so much. He's like, yeah, no, he's fine. None of these throws are being impacted by the throw. So that was the second week in a row where those two are not on the same page. I don't know why they're doing this. I don't know if it's gamesmanship. I don't know if they just hate each other. I don't know if this is one big ploy and they're texting each other, hey, I'll say this, you say that. But they're not on the same page. I think that's the only real takeaway here. But the mistakes, they're not going anywhere. They've been happening all season. And it's almost like we're used to them. It's almost like Kyle Shanahan has to coach around them. that interception can happen because you have a guy wide open. You just need to hit him in the chest. You're rolling towards him. It's not like it was a difficult throw. It's not like he was across the field 20 yards down the field. He was right in front of you, and the pass sailed on you by, who knows, like 5-7 yards. That's the only reason this game is close. Same with the special teams. Like, they continue to be a disaster. But let's talk about the Jimmy Colster. Is that what you expect? Like, did you expect there to be a turnover in this game?
100%. The Jimmy Garoppolo experience, especially in 2021, has been very much a roller coaster, like you explained, right? It can be, you know, the car's driving nice and smooth down the freeway. You're going 70, and then all of a sudden it just veers off the road randomly. Like, he is an interesting watch because he'll be having a great drive. It'll be boom, 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 and then he comes on the next drive, and then he just has a boneheaded throw, and then it turns into an interception. It's almost not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And it's hard when you're a coach and you know your player can kind of detonate at any point, and then you got to coach around it. And that's kind of been the 49ers' MO this season, and that's why they've let teams hang around, because they've been able to build leads on teams, but they have these mistakes, and then they let teams back, or vice versa. They have mistakes early in the game, they get down big, and then they fight their way back. They just can't seem to put four quarters of good offensive football together. And usually when they do, it's against inferior opponents. I'm talking about when they play, you know, playoff level teams. That's kind of what they've done. But they've got so much talent on both sides of the ball that they're able to come out on top more often than not. And that was the case on Sunday. But just, you know, I will say, to Jimmy's credit, he played well in that first half. I thought he was, you know, under control, executing the game plan, hit some big third downs in some tight spots to Juwan Jennings, who's suddenly developed into like a third down machine. And then in the second half, it just completely flipped. Rob, before we hit record, told us that he was 5 of 11 for 39 yards in the second half, and they still won a playoff game on the road as an underdog. It's pretty nuts to say, but just those mistakes can't happen in Green Bay. You know, looking forward to next week. They just can't, because Aaron Rodgers and his Packers offense, they'll bury you if you make those mistakes. So Jimmy Garoppolo at no cost can turn over the ball. We talked about that, protect the ball, protect the ball, protect the ball. And somehow, you know, they gave it away, once on that ugly interception. Special teams had two mistakes that kept Cowboys drives alive. Like, those mistakes just cannot happen in Green Bay, otherwise they'll lose.
So that wasn't – and this goes without saying that, you know, Jimmy can't turn over the ball, but it wasn't as if it was only limited to one throw, you know, where he could have had a turnover. So I remember one where he was rolling across the field. He throws to Trent Sherfield, and he throws into triple coverage. So the Cowboys defender leaps up and deflects the ball. If that first defender doesn't leap up and deflect the ball, the guy right behind him probably intercepts the pass. And if he doesn't intercept the pass, the guy guarding Trent Sherfield is right there on him. So that could have been a disaster. He was kind of saved by that pick. On the deep pass to Brandon Ayuk, he babies the hell out of that throw. Like, that throw, if it's out in front of Ayuk, yeah, it's a touchdown. And, of course, the one where he missed on the blaze out, the Julio route, Ayuk should have had 100 yards in this game. And I feel like you can say that, not 100 yards, but I feel like you can say Ayuk, his stat line would be much better over the course of the season. Like, you'd have a lot more yards, you know, if he were getting the ball in stride. But are the plays. Go ahead.
Sorry to cut you off. I was going to say, I saw Seth Galina from PFF break that play down, and just the evolution of how Kyle Shanahan kind of puts together his offense. It's kind of a cool clip. It's on Twitter. You can go check it out. But basically how their, you know, outside zone run action, and then they come back with it, and then they have like the standard boot off of it, and then they run the, you know, the corner post off of it, which we saw, you know, Trey Lance hit the touchdown against the Texans.
Right.
And then they take that, and then the underneath crosser, which was Ayuk on that play, he turns upfield, which is like the fourth evolution of that play, I guess. And it would have been a touchdown if Jimmy Garoppolo just led the receiver instead of kind of underthrowing that ball. And then Ayuk had to kind of stop and come back to it.
So it was a big play. Yeah. And I guess it does feel like nitpicking to say that, hey, because we just watched against the Titans, that throw get airmailed. So if anything, you want to underthrow it and make sure you get that pass. It was a cool play, just about the design. So, I mean, if you think about it, offense, you want to get the ball in 2.5 seconds. From the time the ball was snapped to the time the ball was thrown, that play took 4.5 seconds. So you're not going to have that much time. That little half roll that they did allowed them about a second and a half. And then you add another second, a second and a half just by having max protection. So there are a lot of nice little wrinkles in that play that allowed them to get the ball off. The max protection allowed Brandon Ayuk to get off, to get across the field. And I feel like a half roll allowed him to get up the field. Yep. And that's how you get back to that 2.5 second window. So they're just really creative play to play callers on both sides, offense and defense. And yeah, it's the Debo touchdown. I felt like that was, it was a, the game was a wrap after that. I love seeing the K'Wan Williams, the play before the interception. Just watch D'Amico Ryan celebrate all game. Like, I think, feel like that was the best play. There was one play where he gave Arden Key after a sack, he gave him like a little forearm to the chest. Yeah, he was getting hyped, man. And I think that's what you want to say. I feel like players feed off of that, and it was really cool. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say on the K'Wan Williams interception, Jordan Willis deserves a ton of credit. Yeah. He took Tyron Smith right back in Dak Prescott's lap, and he had to kind of force the throw there, and K'Wan gets the pick. And I'm sure everyone saw it, the Debo Samuel clip that went viral. That's some superstar. That's some cold-blooded, legendary type stuff. That's the stuff you talk about like 10 years later where Debo's like, yeah, give me the ball. I'll go score. Yeah. And he's 26 yards out, and he cuts back when there was really no lane, and he's able to score. And I watched like the bigger clip, and he talks to running backs coach Bobby Turner after the play, and Bobby Turner basically says the same thing. He's like, not everyone can do this. There was like nowhere to go. And somehow you cut back and your vision was able to take it home. And it was a cool thing to see. And it shows you how special Debo Samuel is as a runner.
He looked like he was dead in the rice, man. Watching that play, I was like, where is he going to go? What is he doing? And then sure enough, zigzag, because he's so fast, he's able to get around the Cowboys. What is there to say about Debo that already hasn't been said? He does this every game, and it's not like he does it once a game. There are like 2 to 3 plays that are jaw-dropping, and it's almost expected. Like, we're normalizing how great he's been, and we shouldn't do that. I feel like that's kind of selling what he's doing short, because he is a wide receiver, and we have to remember that. But whenever they hand him the ball, it's almost guaranteed to get 6, 7, 8. And then that on top of that, so he's going to get, what, like 5 to 10 carries a game. So we know he's going to average 6 or 7 or 8 yards, but one of those, probably 2 of those, are going to be explosive gains. That's not normal, man. Like, we shouldn't be, oh, by the way, yeah, he had a 26-yard touchdown run. And yeah, he does it, the manner in which he does it is pretty impressive. All right, I want to flip the script here, talk about Mike McCarthy. And there were some giant coaching blunders in this game. Thankfully, Mike McCarthy masked some of the 49ers issues, but the play, so they faked a punt, because what would a game, 49ers game, be without a special teams mistake? After that, he leaves the offense, he leaves the special teams on the field. Yeah. And the 49ers defense comes on the field. It's like, all right, fine.
They were on the field already. So they just stayed on the field.
So they're looking around like, all right, what is going to happen next? The Cowboys look like they have no idea what they're doing. Ended up, I don't know if they wanted the 49ers to call a timeout. I don't know if they wanted to just be confusing and they hoped they could get it over on the 49ers again. But the end result of, you know, what could have happened was not worth that trouble. And that just kind of goes to show you, you know, Mike McCarthy being Mike McCarthy. But he did a few different things in this game that really aided the 49ers. Go to the very end of the game, Dak Prescott sliding. Dak Prescott, I don't know why he thought he needed to run 15, 20, or however many yards it was to get down there. But they just looked like a team that was not very well coached. And Troy Aikman actually had a clip going around today talking about, hey, they are off. They are off by a lot. And when I say they, I mean the cornerbacks. They're playing scared. He said that they could have completed they can bleed curls, they can bleed comebacks, you can get whatever you want to. And that's just, it's not true. It couldn't be further from the truth based on how the game is going. So the 49ers, they had a 4-man rush a lot. So Dak Prescott had 34 attempts against the 49ers 4-man rush. He went 16 for 34. That is 47%. You are going to take that every day of the week. 47% for 6 yards per attempt. And also a negative 0.3 EPA per play. So Yeah, you're going to want to do that. So knowing that you're having that type of success against a four-man rush, so Eggman's saying you run a curl, run a comeback, run these static routes is what Dallas does. So knowing that's what they do, Emmanuel Mosley, and I tweeted this out, like he was just sitting on the routes. Like he didn't care. He knew what was going to come because that's what Dallas does. Like everybody in the stadium knows that's what they're going to do. So sure enough, they're able to force incompletions, especially on third down. But I feel like there's a lot of grasping at straws. It's easy to blame this person. It's easy to blame that person. But the analysis is pretty lazy when it comes to that because it's just not true. It's not accurate. The 49ers were prepared. The Cowboys were not. The Cowboys seemed like they were going to roll the ball out. Hey, we are better than you. And that plan just didn't work at all. The 49ers were far more physical, and they took advantage of them. But, yeah, between Mike McCarthy, between the offense that they run, they made life easier on the 49ers than it should have been. And, again, like, there aren't many teams. There aren't probably more than three teams in the NFL that are able to rush for and have success over the course of the game and be able to sustain that success. So, again, like when we talk about D'Amico Ryans, as wonderful as he is, he's able to get a lot more creative because of that up front. But what did you see from McCarthy in this game?
My kind of takeaway after the game, when you just look at these two teams, the 49ers and the Cowboys, there's a lot of talent on both teams, right? I thought the 49ers were the more talented team. Like they've got more playmakers at different positions than the Cowboys do. But the Cowboys are, I think, you know, from top down, just an organizational failure in terms of how they put their players in a position to succeed, how they coach them up, you know, managing different game situations, just their organizational ethos. You look at the two teams and the 49ers, you know, just well coached on both sides of the ball, physical, tough, a brand of football that travels and just kind of the opposite of the Cowboys. Whereas the Cowboys have a lot of playmakers on both sides of the ball. Yet I felt like if they had a coaching staff similar to what the 49ers have in place, the outcome would have been different. I just thought that was kind of the difference in the game. And that's why you and I felt confident going kind of as the week went on. Like, is Kyle Shanahan going to lose to Mike McCarthy and this coaching staff? And I think that was kind of the big difference. And you saw that in the game as it unfolded. Mike McCarthy just made some boneheaded decisions. They had some unforced penalties. And, you know, you'd tell me, like, Randy Gregory going offsides, like, how are you going to blame Mike McCarthy for that? But that's coaching, right? And we talked about it early in the season with Kyle Shanahan when they lost four straight. Like, if you're either coaching it or you're allowing it to happen. And it felt like Mike McCarthy and that coaching staff was just allowing these things to happen. And it finally bit him in the ass.
Defensive holding on third down. That is tough to do.
Lineman.
Yeah. And that's just one example. But there were a lot of instances there in the game where you're thinking, like, Dallas, what are you doing? Like, why are you doing that? And sure enough, the 49ers were able to get over on them and get the best of them. Okay, let's turn the page because they beat the Cowboys. Yay, it's Mike McCarthy. And, you know, that's a big reason why, because Jerry Jones said it after the game. We should not be losing with this type of talent on the team. And he's right. He's correct in that sense. But let's turn the page. Green Bay on deck. This is a big one. 49ers are currently 6-point underdog. So the line opened up at 5, 5.5, which is a dead zone. I mean, you're not getting 25, 20, 29, 24. Those games don't exist in the NFL, at least to a point where, you know, the number 5 matters. So early on, that line, it dipped to 4.5, which tells you people with a lot of money who do this for a living are betting on the 49ers when a line moves in that direction. Then overnight, and that line is still there today, 49ers are down to 6-point underdogs. That is usually an indication that there is an injury. Sure enough, Kyle Shanahan says on Monday, Jimmy Garoppolo suffered sustained a shoulder injury during the second quarter of the Cowboys game where he was sacked, driven into ground. And that's how, you know, some of those misses came about, even though Kyle would disagree. So the 6-point underdog, that's where we are right now. How much of Jimmy's shoulder, like, do we need to be worried about? Because, you know, now it's Rodgers, and as much respect as I have for Dak Prescott, like, he's just not Aaron Rodgers. And, of course, nobody's really Aaron Rodgers. He's the best quarterback in the NFL. He's been playing at a level that nobody has been playing at for some time. So how should we be worried about this injury for Jimmy?
you and I being the gambling degenerates we are, we pay attention to these things extremely closely. And we were texting back and forth yesterday because, yeah, the line was at 4.5 at one point. And then all of a sudden it shifted to 6. And, you know, 1.5 points on like a Monday, Tuesday is significant line movement. So we were like, something happening behind the scenes, like something we don't know about. Like, it's Jimmy Garoppolo's shoulder worse than it really is. But, you know, after listening to both of those guys talk, I have no doubt in my mind that Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be the starter on Saturday night. He's probably in a ton of pain, both with the shoulder and the thumb, especially given the way that he played in that second half. But that being said, unless he's like just cannot, you know, lift his shoulder, cannot throw the ball, you know, I don't see how he's not the starter on Saturday. So I don't think that injury necessarily is the only reason that the line slid, you know, from 4.5 to 6. You kind of take a step back and you realize, you know, the Packers are the number one seed. They have the MVP. They're at home. They've been off for 2 weeks now. And they basically, you know, mailed in that week 18 game. So they've had a ton of rest. The 49ers coming off a short week. Nick Bosa's in the concussion protocol. Now they have to travel cross country. So you just put all these things together and you're like, okay, I get why the Packers are 6-point favorites. And it kind of makes sense. Just back to the Jimmy Garoppolo injury. So 49ers held a practice on Tuesday night at 5. So a later practice, kind of give the players kind of a normal-ish week. And so media didn't get a chance to see if Jimmy Garoppolo threw or not. He was at practice. I think he was officially listed as limited, but they didn't get a chance to see if he was throwing or not. So we don't know, but I imagine he's a starter. Like, do you have any doubt in your mind that he's playing on Sunday?
No, man. Finest drugs in the world. He will be out there. They're going to shoot him up. They're going to do whatever it takes for Jimmy to be able to raise his shoulder and throw the ball, and he's going to play. I don't imagine – if he was able to play through a torn UCL in, 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, he's probably going to be able to play through this. I'm not downplaying his injury. I don't want to make it seem like that's the case, because all these guys are hurt, and Jimmy is a, you know, tough son of a gun when it comes out. And I think we should acknowledge that. But, I mean, knowing what's at stake, knowing that he's been able to tough it out this whole time, I imagine that he's going to play. But that is a good point, because, you know, Lambeau Field is one of the few stadiums in the NFL, you know, where you have a significant home field advantage. They are playing in the cold, and that just because they're playing in the cold doesn't really mean anything, but it's going to affect different players. It's going to make the ball bounce in different ways. And there are just things you can't plan for when you're dealing with 15 degree weather. And it's probably going to be even colder than that, since it'll be at night. And again, Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams. So those two, when they play the 49ers, when they play any team, they go into God mode. When they play the 49ers, they go into like demigod mode. They go in, they just don't miss. It is unreal the chemistry that these two have. And what are we going to see, I guess, is the question. What is D'Amico Ryans going to do? So when they did it a couple years ago, and again, if you just look at Adams' box scores when he plays the 49ers, I'll save you some time. It's going to be a double-digit number on one side, and it's going to be a triple-digit number on the other. He's going to have a lot of catches for a lot of yards, whether that's Richard Sherman, whether that's Emmanuel Mosley, whether that's Jason Verrett, whoever's been guarding him, Mikel Weatherspoon, like players who you would feel, you know, somewhat comfortable guarding him. He makes them look like just players who don't belong in the NFL, which is saying something. Like, he is easily one of the three best wide receivers in the NFL, if not the best. I'm interested to see what the plan is for him. Obviously, how you stop Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers is by rushing the passer. That should go without saying, but it's going to go deeper than that. Defensively, you have some numbers as far as the, you know, where the Packers have been trending. You know, they're on defense. So again, another way to stop Aaron Rodgers is by keeping him off the field. 49ers are a very physical, good running football team. What do you know about the Packers running defense?
They're god awful. I think Bill Belichick said this long time ago. You know, especially this late in the season when all these teams are talented, it really just comes down to finding the opponent's weakness and, you know, just, you know, smashing the button and just going after that weakness and then trying to hide your weakness, right? So I feel like you and I, we try to figure out what the opponent's weaknesses are. And coaches typically do that by just hammering out film. And at least you and I feel like we don't have the time. So we look at the numbers to see, just to see if we can find a pattern of what their weakness is. And the Packers' run defense is just pathetic. I mean, they are, let's see if I can pull this up. They're 27th in rushing defense DVOA. They're 27th in rushing defense EPA per play. So they're giving up big plays. They're 32nd in rushing success rate. They're 32nd in the number of explosive runs they've allowed. And this is all in the latter half of the season. So we're, you know, waiting basically since October, because that's really what matters. So they're bottom five in all these categories. And it's a clear problem. And I think the 49ers are going to go after it this week.
I agree with everything you said. And even more so, what's important is we don't know the status of Za'Darius Smith, who's their best defensive lineman. He's probably going to play, just, again, knowing what the situation is, knowing that they had a bye week, he's probably going to, you know, that rest is going to benefit him. Still, the speed that they're able to get to the edge, you can't simulate that. You can't, there are no Debo Samuels on the Packers practice squad that can tell you, or, you know, that's going to be able to run through tackles, or going to be able to, you know, run around in the backfield and make plays. So that's going to be a big deal. I feel like, you know, having all the weapons, being able to, again, if Jimmy has to play point guard this game more so than ever, he has to distribute the ball. Is this a game where we're going to see Kittle? Because he's been kind of an afterthought. But when I say that, the 49ers ran for 169 yards. They don't do that without Kittle blocking. Like, we have to acknowledge he's going to, you know, impact the game without getting the ball. But when he gets the ball, he impacts the game too. And I want to make that very clear as well. So he's still one of the best players in the NFL. I wonder if this is a game where, because I think we kind of talked about it last year or last week, where, you know, maybe that was a Kittle game. Maybe this is a Kittle game. Every game is going to be a Debo game no matter what. We know that. We're seeing Ayuk looking like, you know, an actual number one receiver. He's led the team in receiving yards the past two games. So I feel like they're going to be able to get over on the Packers on the outside, especially knowing that, you know, who knows if Jair Alexander is going to play. He hasn't played in a while. Again, the bye week will probably help him. But
week one, I think, right?
Yeah, it's been a long time. So, you know, there are a bunch of different ways the 49ers can hurt you. Again, it's just about distributing the ball, staying out of those, you know, false starts, holding penalties, and staying ahead of the chains. I think we need to give Elijah Mitchell a lot of credit. So I think he averaged like 3-point-something yards per carry last game. But that ignores the plays where he's hitting the backfield and he turns -2 into +3. He turns -1 into +5. He does that a lot. I think his vision is getting much better. And I think he's just no longer running blind into the line of scrimmage. And now he is, you know, hitting those cutback lanes. So they're getting a lot better on offense. And, you know, they're peaking at the right time. Of course, they have yet to put it together for four quarters, because it wouldn't be a 49ers game if that were to happen, if they were to make it easy on themselves. But I am confident that the offense will be able to move the ball on the Packers. I think that we're going to see, you know, they're going to reach the 20s. I feel like that's not going out on a limb by saying that. My concern is on the other side of the ball. Will what we've seen in recent weeks be able to carry over? Because in the second half against the Rams, the defense was excellent. And honestly, the first half, they weren't that bad either. And for the most part against the Cowboys, like, they were lights out. The way that they are getting pressure, the way that they are getting after people with four. So you mentioned I forgot who you mentioned against Tyron Smith, but Charles Minnehue was working Tyron Smith like on three or four different plays. You would have thought Smith was a guy who was traded for a 6-round pick, and Omenihu was a guy who's been doing this for 10 years and who's been dominant. So they're having guys come out of nowhere. Like, Kevin Givens was winning.
Best game of the season, easily.
It is really impressive that they're able to get this type of production from like 10 defensive linemen. Like, who can say that? They have an embarrassment of riches up front, but still, you're going to have to be able to cover. Ambry Thomas has played very, very well in recent weeks. I feel like Emmanuel Mosley does not get the type of credit that he should be getting, because we only focus on the targets, but like, he has been lights out against OBJ. And again, CeeDee Lamb had one catch. He did a really nice job against Amari Cooper. Like, he's been put in some difficult situations, and I think he's done a really good job of coming up and, you know, just limiting the plays. But will that happen against Davante Adams? But I don't know, man. There's a lot of different directions that you can go in this game. Do we have any potential marks on either side of the ball that the 49ers can take advantage of?
Marks. So you mentioned George Kittle earlier, and that was a great segue because I was just looking at this last night. So Football Outsiders does this thing where they break down DVOA by position. So the Packers defense, when they guard any of the wide receivers, so wide receiver 1, 2, and 3, they're top 7 in DVOA against those three positions, which makes sense, right? They've had good corners all year long. They get Jaire Alexander back, who's probably their best. Rasul Douglas, who they signed off the street, has been good. Eric Stokes, is that your guy from Georgia? Is that right? He's a rookie.
That is a guy that I did not like, actually. I like the Jaguars guy. So one went to the Packers, one went to the Jaguars, and we're seeing how that's turning out.
Yeah, we won't blame you for that one. But they've had good cornerback play all season long. And so, yeah, they've been top 7 in the DVOA against those positions. But against the tight end, they're 28th in DVOA. They've been giving up an average of over 60 yards a game to opposing tight ends. George Kittle had, I believe, 7 catches for 92 yards in their first meeting. And generally, he's just played well against the Packers. If you just remember, he had that big corner post touchdown on Sunday Night Football a couple years ago. He just seems to show up in big moments against Green Bay. So I could see George Kittle having a big game against the Green Bay linebackers. Devondre Campbell has been a good addition to this Packers defense because it feels like their linebackers have always just been terrible. But I still think that's
He's an all-pro area.
Yeah. So, but I do think there's an advantage there potentially for the 49ers, offensively that they can go after. And then defensively, kind of just flipping the script, you know, we talk about, okay, where can the 49ers take advantage? And then now where can the Packers take advantage? And I just think that's, you know, Devontae Adams against whoever. And you brought this up earlier. And I remember, I think they played the Ravens kind of at the tail end of the season. Is that right? In Baltimore. It was like a late Sunday afternoon game. I remember, I think, who's their defense coordinator? Wink Martindale. Did he just like double Adams the entire game? You look at all his box scores, and I think he only had like 6 catches for like 44 yards. And I think they asked Wink Martindale the following week if he was going to do that with Jamar Chase. And he said, Jamar Chase isn't on Devontae Adams' level. You think D'Amico Ryans is at something like that defensively to try to completely take Adams out of the game?
Yeah, that's an interesting thought because, well, first of all, Wink Martindale, about that Wink Martindale quote, people took offense to like saying, thinking that it was, you know, he's talking down like it was an indictment on Jamar Chase. Like, nope, it wasn't at all. Devontae Adams is just really freaking good. I don't, just because I think D'Amico Ryans sticks to his guns, like he's going to change it up. But at the same time, like he's going to come after you on third down. Like he's going to play man coverage on third down. He's going to rely on his 4 guys. And he knows by even adding a 5th guy, he's going to get a 1-on-1 for Bosa, 1-on-1 for Key, 1-on-1 for Armstead. And one of those guys are going to win. So I don't, which puts even more pressure on the secondary to perform. We talked about it before we got on here. So you can get burned when you blitz. And the 49ers were burned when they blitz. Think about the first touchdown against Amari Cooper. They're going single high. And who slot I think fades. The Packers will target is the slot fade. And they did it in the first game to K'Wan Williams. And it was Alan Lazard. It wasn't even Devontae Adams. So for as, you know, as well, people talk about K'Wan Williams like he's the best slot corner in the NFL. That is not true. I know this is a 49ers podcast.
It's a good slot blitzer.
He can't turn and run. And we see that every time he has to. It matters, you know. If you play cornerback and you cannot turn and run, you are going to have a difficult time keeping up. So he couldn't do it against Mark Cooper. I don't think that they're going to leave him on an island where, you know, he's going to give up that slot fade. I don't think we're going to see Tart and Ward in the middle of the field. I imagine, you know, they're not going to, you know, just set him up for failure, so to say. So, but at the same time, you would have to kind of revamp everything that you've done over the past month or so to put you know, Tart or Ward or whoever that extra defender is over Adams. I think the Packers do a really good job of moving him around in the formation. So that makes it even more difficult to defend him. It sucks, man, just because there's no, you double him and you say, make somebody else beat you, which is smart in theory. But by doing that, you can, I mean, if you do that, they can run. They're really good running the ball. And Rodgers is just a computer as far as knowing where to go with the ball, getting the ball out quick. And I don't like the idea of doubling Adams just because I know that Rodgers will be able to take advantage. It kind of goes without saying, but you're just going to have to play your game. You're going to have to do what got you here, and that's not doubling the opponent's receiver. So the Rams had really good receivers. The Cowboys had really good receivers. And Kupp had a big day, but he had a big day against Dante Johnson. Dante Johnson is not playing, and they're not going to have Darquez Denard at safety. They're not going to have Dante Johnson at safety. So I don't imagine, I don't envision, you know, a 150-yard game. Like, I want to say, I'm not going to say Davante Adams isn't going to, you know, get his yards because he's the best receiver in the NFL. That is going to happen. But I just think that the way the cornerbacks are playing, like, they're playing a lot better than we're realizing. I think the defensive line is kind of clouding how well they've been playing on the back end, which is a great, like, that's not a bad thing at all because they have been, they truly have been that playing that well.
It's how the team's built.
Yeah, yeah. And that's, it's a compliment off each other.
I was going to say, so DVOA also does like in-season trends where you can kind of split based on week to see the improvement. And the 49ers pass defense from week 1 to 9 was 24th, which adds up, right? They had a ton of DPIs, ton of big plays down the field. But from week 10 onward, they're 10th in pass defense. So a lot of people like to point out that the secondary is kind of the weak point. I know we talk about it that way, but Emmanuel Mosley and Ambry Thomas played pretty well the last few weeks. Tartan Ward, one of the most underrated safety duos. I think they've just gotten better as the four of those guys have stayed on the field. Doesn't mean they're going to shut Davante Adams down. I think Adams is still going to get probably 100 yards in this game, but they've been better as the season's gone on. And, you know, the 49ers defense is built around that pass rush, and that pass rush has been winning more often than not the last like 4, 5, 6 weeks with different guys up front, using stunts, creative schemes, whatever. And I think that combination, like you mentioned, has to be on point on Saturday for the 49ers to come out on top. But, you know, one of the other things we wanted to hit on, obviously the 49ers lost to the Packers earlier in the season, week 3 on Sunday Night Football. Just how much has changed with this team since then? And I was going through this yesterday because I wanted to write about it for Niners Nation. Check that out. And there is so much different when you – there's a lot that's changed for this team when you just go back and watch. And just some of the things I wanted to hit on, Trey Sermon was a starting running back in that game. Elijah Mitchell did not play. Deebo Samuel had 2 carries, but they were both end-arounds. You know, Deebo Samuel, the wide back, had not, you know, come into play. Mohamed Sanu, I think, was – he played like 45 snaps. I think he had the second most snaps of any of the receivers.
Do you remember the Mohamed Sanu experiment?
Oh my God. He was dropping passes left and right. Juwan Jennings has been such an upgrade over Mohamed Sanu.
Who would have thought?
Who would have thought? But there's a reason that Mohamed Sanu still has his hoodie and his beanie on the sideline, and he's not playing on Sundays. But Juwan Jennings didn't play a snap in that game, offensively at least. And so he's now become, you know, a reliable third down threat. And then defensively, so much has changed. They had, you know, Diamador Lenore and Josh Norman playing outside corner. I think Lenore got benched in that game and Norman came in, if I remember correctly.
Norman was hurt. Norman actually ended up getting hurt.
That's right.
He was playing well early on. Lenore comes in. He gives up a big third down and a big touchdown just because rookie, not used to seeing things. And then Dante Johnson comes in, gives up a deep fade.
That's right.
So those two, like, they're not on the field. You can, and it's easy to say that, well, they're not going to be on the field, so Davante Adams isn't going to have a big game. No, that's not how it works. But the way that the cornerbacks are playing now compared to, you know, how they were playing then is just night and day. There are obviously other differences too. So, I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo threw an interception in that game. Will that happen again in this game? Trey Sermon was in the backfield. The 49ers could not run the ball then. They were not using Deebo Samuel in the same manner that they are today. So Trey Sermon, 10 carries, 31 yards, leading rusher. Next leading rusher, Kyle Juszczyk, 5 carries, 14 yards. They ran for 67 yards, averaged 3.2 yards per attempt. That is not going to happen. Deebo Samuel had 2 carries.
Worst rushing performance of the season.
Deebo Samuel is not going to have 2 carries, and I guarantee you he is going to run for more than 31 yards. They were able to throw the ball a little bit. That's because, you know, they were down so big, so they had to. They really didn't have a choice. Kittle had a big game. Samuel, he had 52 yards. And, again, another part that's changed, that was when Kyle Shanahan hated Brandon Ayuk. And when I say hated, obviously I'm being facetious, but what we've seen, how they're using Brandon Ayuk now compared to his usage back then, just moving around in the slot, isolating him one-on-one. Like, it's there's a lot that's changed. So offensively, defensively, who knows? I imagine there were special teams mistakes in that game, just blindly thinking that. And, you know, that's probably not going to change this game. But is there anything else that really stands out to you in that game that's different?
Yeah, Arden Key only played 3 snaps, and they were all at edge rusher. He's an inside rusher now. Eric Armstead took 27 snaps at defensive end. He now primarily plays the 3 technique inside. So they're so much different. And I'm sure you could do the same thing for the Green Bay Packers. And you could just, you know, it's a long season. It's an 18-week season. You evolve. But it feels like the 49ers are just clicking on all cylinders right now, even if they haven't been able to put it together for four quarters. It feels like their coaches, you know, right around that Chicago game, midseason, kind of figured out on both sides of the ball just kind of what to do. Kyle Shanahan went back to his roots. They really started running the ball. They punted on the Trey Lance package. Defensively, they, you know, shifted around some personnel. They really started getting after the opposing quarterback right around that time of the season. And, you know, their cornerbacks have been playing better since. So it a lot's different. And so does that mean they're going to win this game? I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to execute for four quarters on their game plan and stay on their P's and Q's. But just wanted to point out that a lot of people just, they're like, oh, week 3, it comes down to those 37 seconds. If they had stopped Aaron Rodgers, they would have won. There's a lot more that went into that game. And it's just trying to point out how different these two teams are since that game in September.
Yeah, everybody always does that. They remember the last thing that they saw in the game and think that's what the game came down to. Nope, not true, not at all. So one of the things that's changed, Jaire Alexander, he had the interception that game where he made a really nice play coming off of his read. He might not even play this game. So that is huge if the 49ers are able to get in this one without the Packers' best cornerback. Okay, we've talked about this game. Let's make some predictions before we get out of here. So again, 49ers are 6-point underdogs. The total on the game is 47.5. So what do you think happens?
Is Nick Bosa playing?
We are going to act under the assumption for our predictions that Nick Bosa is going to be cleared from the concussion protocol. I imagine will the 49ers doctor, like, what would it take for the doctors to not clear him in this game? Because Shanahan, they're going to have to look him in the face and say, yeah, he can't go. I don't envision that happening at all. I feel like Shanahan will slip them some cash and make sure that, hey, we're going to get Bosa on the field. We're going to act as if Bosa plays. We're going to act as if Jimmy plays. We're going to act as if Fred Warner plays too.
Yeah, I heard John Bosa, Nick's dad, was on KNBR or something like that. And he was like, yeah, Nick's going to be good to go.
Like, I'm sure he will be.
He's like, yeah, he's going to be out there. How weird is it that he was there hugging players post-game? Like, how many teams let players, parents, you know, out there hugging players? Do you think, you know, John Bosa's out there with LA Chargers hugging players? I don't think so. So I thought that was kind of unique. But just back to the game picks, I don't know. I'm conflicted. Last week, I was very confident that the San Francisco 49ers would go into Dallas and win that game, especially as the week went on and you start to break the game down. You're like, okay, you can see a path to a win. And you can with the Green Bay Packers too. You know, it's a team that they've beat in the past. They have a formula. And, you know, our guy Niners Nation, Rich Madrid, brought up the point. The Browns-Packers game, I think, is really the blueprint for how the 49ers should attack this team. I think the Browns rushed for 250 in that game on 25 attempts. I think they averaged like just a hair under 9 yards a carry. They would have won that game on the road in Lambeau in December if it weren't for Baker Mayfield throwing 4 interceptions. I was talking to a couple folks with the Browns like media, and they were basically saying, yeah, Baker Mayfield played a horrible game. If they got some just competent quarterback play, they would have won by double digits. So I feel like that's the blueprint.
Streets are sounding familiar.
Yeah. Though Jimmy Garoppolo, I don't think he's thrown 4 picks in a game. But, you know, both teams are just constructed similarly. Not saying Elijah Mitchell is as good as Nick Chubb, but I think, you know, you can get similar type of impact. They run similar offenses, whatever. So I think that's kind of the blueprint. Just the biggest question is going to come down to, can the 49ers limit these explosive plays down the field with Aaron Rodgers, Davante Adams, Alan Lazard, you know, MVS, all those guys, can they just kind of keep the top on that defense? I think that's what it's going to come down to. I don't think the cold in Lambeau is going to really bother these guys. Yes, it's going to be cold. I don't think it's going to be snowing, or, you know, raining or whatever. So I do think the 49ers have a chance. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to come down to the fourth quarter. I think it's going to be a one possession game. You know, my heart wants to say that the 49ers are going to win, go on to the NFC Championship game, but the head says that Aaron Rodgers looks as confident as ever and that he's going to come out on top. So I'm going to go Packers 31, 49ers 27. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be one of those Aaron Rodgers late drive, you know, situations. I think that's how it's going to come down. And, you know, I think the 49ers season is going to end on Saturday.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat where, like, history would suggest that the 49ers will win. Like, this is a team that has gotten over on the Packers time after time after time, even with the Packers being favored. And obviously that wasn't the case in 2019. But before that, the 49ers just found ways to upset the Packers. And a lot of it was because what they've been able to do on the ground. You mentioned the Packers defense. The 49ers should be able to score and move the ball consistently. They just, again, can't have the penalties, can't have the turnovers, can't have the easy missed layups from the quarterback. On the other side, so the Packers, I mean, we know Aaron Rodgers, we know Devonta Adams, we know that they're going to get theirs. That is going to happen. Can you limit the explosive plays? Because down the stretch, the Packers finished 29th in explosive running plays. So they are not going to be a team that is going to get over on you on the ground. What they can do is turn those, they can get down the field in a snap of a finger because they can throw the ball down the field. Like Aaron Rodgers is able to do that, not just to Devonta Adams, but limiting the big play will be huge. Making the Packers be methodical will be huge. If the defense can do that, they have a great shot. If the defense can make Rodgers uncomfortable, make him keep him in those third and sevens, third and sixes where he doesn't, you know, they can't do their little RPO, get it out quick, and convert third and three, third and four. Love the chances there. Again, special teams. That's another area. So as much as we talk about the 49ers, you mentioned this, the Packers, they don't have a good special teams unit either. So maybe it's a wash.
In DVOA.
Yeah, for the first time ever, it's going to be a wash for the 49ers special teams unit. That will be something to keep an eye on. Again, though, I feel like when in doubt, especially when the two teams are close, like we have to give credit to the Packers. They are a good team. They do have plenty of talent. Like Darnell Savage is one of the best safeties that I've seen. He's a very good player. It'll be interesting to see if Jaire Alexander plays and Za'Darius Smith plays, how efficient they are on the offensive line, if they can block the 49ers. Because if they can't, and most teams haven't been able to block the 49ers in the past month or so, and that's why, you know, they've been winning these games. So if they get off to a fast start like they have, like they did last week, I won't say like they have because that was not the case against the Rams, but being able to get your pass rush and let them tee off for four quarters as opposed to two quarters will be a big deal. I don't think that happens though. And I think the 49ers do fall to the Packers. I don't feel like that's going to be a disappointing season though, based on, you know, what's happening.
Absolutely not.
So I'm interested to see how it plays out. I wouldn't be surprised if the 49ers win, but I think it's going to be something like 27-24, something along those lines, where it's a high scoring. It'll probably come down to the final drive again. And this time the 49ers come up short. I mean, much like they did in week three. I think it's going to be a different version of the game. It's not going to be the same. It's not going to be where the 49ers get down big and have to come back. But yeah, I just think Rodgers is just going to be too much to overcome. Like, he's a really freaking good player. Like, he's the best. And when you go against the best in the playoffs, you have to be at your best. And we haven't seen the 49ers be at their best for four quarters, and that's why I'm picking the Packers.
Especially against a team that's as good as the Green Bay Packers. And I feel like a lot of 49ers fans just tend to underestimate how good this team is, just given the fact that, you know, San Francisco's had a lot of success in some big games against Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur. And I feel like a lot of people think about those two games in 2019. But forget the game in 2020, which I get they rolled out some, you know, practice squad receivers, or the game earlier this season. But, you know, they're a well-oiled machine. They know what to do. And I was thinking about this yesterday. It feels like the 49ers 2021 season is very much like the Rams 2020 season, where the Rams 10-6, 49ers 10-7. Rams won a road playoff game in Seattle. 49ers road playoff win in Dallas. Rams go on the road to Green Bay, one seed, lose. I just think the 49ers season kind of ends up in the same way, which, again, is not a disappointment. I said it's a successful season. Kyle Shanahan road playoff win, that's huge. 49ers have only done that like five or six times in their franchise history, so it's huge. But, you know, better quarterback, better team, you know, on the road. It's just, it's a lot to overcome. It's a lot for a succeed. And I just think 49ers are going to fall short on Sunday or Saturday.
You heard it here first. Akash just compared Jimmy Garoppolo to Jared Goff in the playoffs. That'll do it for us. Please rate, subscribe, review, leave us five stars. We appreciate you hanging with us all season. It's been fun. Obviously, we're not rooting against the 49ers. We would love to see them win because keep on keeping on. Don't have to worry about the offseason. Like, they're a really good team. And in my opinion, last week, I thought the winner of that game would represent the NFC. That was probably a bit premature. I feel like this week is what we're going to see. So if the 49ers beat the Packers, they are going to come out of the NFC. If the Packers beat the 49ers, I feel like they're going to come out of the NFC. Yep, so
agreed.
This is the Sueto NFC Championship. So again, it'll be fun. Saturday night, man, under the lights. Can't wait. Thanks as always. Please again, rate, subscribe, review, leave us five stars wherever it is you get your podcast. I am Kyle. Follow me at KP_show. Akash, where can we find you?
They can follow me on Twitter at AKASHANAV. And I did not say Jimmy Garoppolo is playing like Jared Goff, but they both did have thumb injuries. And you know, last time I checked, Jared Goff got traded after that loss. And who knows? And we'll leave you with that. Go Niners. Hopefully they win on Saturday. And we'll be back next week.